We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Thursday, March 14th, and there is a lot to talk about. And occasionally, we haven't done this in a while, and we should more often, but occasionally we like to simulcast with my good friend Chris Salcedo, who is on air out of Texas. And we're going to be talking more about some of the politics and local politics in Texas, as well as some of the other national topics for this morning. So if we have Chris Salcedo, let's see if he can link up here.
And
good morning, Chris.
Good morning to you, Jenna Ellis. How are you, old friend?
I am great. This has been too long, my friend. So I'm so glad that we can do this simulcast.
Yeah, you know what? And I was telling the folks, telling my audience what we were. Typically, the way this works, folks, if you're new to our simulcasts, we basically interview each other on what our what our areas of expertise or whatever's on our mind. And because Jenna Ellis and I talk every now and again about what's going on in the country, and I always like to pick her brain about legal issues, if you don't mind me having ladies go first, I'd love to ask you a question about. I've been of the opinion all of this stuff against President Trump is leftist lawfare, is what I call it. And it has no basis in fact, no basis in law, no basis in fairness. And I predicted, and several other watchers, and maybe you are on record as predicting this too, that a lot of these cases were falsely predicated and would crumble under their own weight and crumble under their own corruption, New York and Florida and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted to ask you about Judge Aline Cannon, who is a Trump appointee, right? She's got this case where Trump is being accused of retaining classified documents that he was entitled to. Meanwhile, Special Counsel Robert Hur is saying, yes, we have all the evidence in the world that Joe Biden was illegally retaining, willfully and illegally retaining, classified information for 40 years. However, we can't establish that he did it intentionally, with intent, which nobody believes, right? So I wanted to ask you about Aline Cannon because she's making moves lately that she's granting delays, and some legal watchers, and I want to see if you concur, are saying that she appears poised to dismiss this Inquisitor Jack Smith case about classified documents out of hand. What do you think?
You know, that will be a very interesting decision. I don't know that I would necessarily predict that she'll dismiss it out of hand, which is absolutely a possibility. But I think that the issue here is that she has been a very good judge. And it's not that she's pro-Trump or anti-Trump. And, of course, some of the judges that we saw, of course, like in the E. Jean Carroll civil trial, that judge in New York was clearly anti-Trump, and that was problematic. Judges are supposed to be impartial, and what she has done is just clearly looked at the issues before her and has done what judges should do. And so I think that she is being very responsible here. But this is one of those cases, Chris, that we're seeing the double standard of justice. When we look at what mm-hmm. Special Counsel Hur said, and that he said, you know, the DOJ contemplated how Biden's lawyers might poke holes in the case. I was speaking to my audience about this a couple days ago in advance of what Hur was going to testify to, because we had some of his opening statements, and saying, so what prosecutor then would ever bring a case if that's the standard, to say, well, the defense is going to poke holes in my case, so, you know, we're just not even going to try it because jurors might find the defendant to be sympathetic. That's not the standard.
I know, right? Old and doddering. I was looking for that in some legal journals. I couldn't find old and doddering anywhere.
for I must have missed that class in law school when exactly. when they taught that rule.
yeah, exactly. Of course, decades-long violation of the law, and you and I both know what it entails, taking classified information. You're in a skiff. You're not allowed to take any recording devices. You're not allowed to leave with the documents, but Joe Biden did over 40 years, and we're to believe, oh, he didn't do it intentionally.
Right. Well, and there's also, don't forget the actual legal distinction here, that Joe Biden retained classified documents as the sitting vice president and then leaving the vice presidential office, where Trump was the sitting U.S. president. And that is a very big distinction, because everybody else, including Pence, Hillary, and others who have left their offices, none of them have been a sitting United States president. And that is a huge distinction under the Presidential Records Act. And right. yet we're still seeing this two standard of justice. And also the fact that if Biden can't even form intent to hold documents from a decade ago, or actually more than that now, 12 years ago, then somehow he's competent to be running for president and a current sitting president? That's a problem, Chris.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, some of these documents dated back to 1974 when he was a senator, and certainly no senator, no vice president has any legal right to take these documents out of that skiff. Only the president of the United States, by statute, can do that. And so he's been in violation over decades, myriad times. So, yeah, I'm glad you made that distinction. I think Judge Elaine Cannon is going to make note of that. And just my layman's prediction, I think this one gets thrown out, again, under the corruption under which it was brought, not to mention the leftist lawfare. All right. What do you got?
And it may be, too. And the last thing I'll say on that is, you know, it may be that under the Presidential Records Act, you know, as a matter of law, she says that. And what's interesting as well is that just yesterday, Trump has also asked through his lawyers in New York court to stay any of the proceedings until the Supreme Court issues their ruling on presidential immunity, which may impact a number of these cases as well. And that's going in front of the U.S. Supreme Court April 22nd. And then we expect to get a ruling by June. But this is also setting all of this lawfare back on its heels because, of course, the Democrats would like Trump to be in a defendant's chair for the entire campaign leading up to the election.
Yep, I hear that. I hear that. What do you got for me?
Yeah, so you're in Texas, and you guys just had a big primary on Super Tuesday, and we talked about this for my listeners, just from kind of a national perspective, and then had, you know, a few people on, including my friend Katrina Pearson, who is now in a runoff in House District 33, and then Brandon Gill, who is going for the U.S. Congressional seat, who won 58% of the vote. I mean, this is great. So in the contrast here between the Texas rhinos that have kind of governed the state for a while versus these up-and-coming genuine conservatives, where does Texas sit?
Well, this it was a brilliant primary for the conservative movement. I think it's fair to say that we achieved our first clean, decisive victory against what some would call rhinos, what I call pro-Democrat Republicans, what some would call actual Democrats who just couldn't get elected as Democrats, so they call themselves Republicans. It was decisive. It was a political earthquake. By the way, the Gill debate, Brandon Gill, CD 26, Congressional District 26, I moderated that debate between a lot of good candidates who I thought were very conservative. Mr. Gill was in attendance, and it was a good debate, and there was a lot of substance that was covered. And the focus was, of course, defeating Democrats, which you can't say about certain Republicans in the state of Texas. So in the face of the most left-wing, anti-American, kook, fringe Democrat party this nation has ever been cursed with, any Republican seen as giving them aid and comfort, i.e. John Cornyn, i.e. a guy by the name of Speaker Dade Phelan, i.e. any one of his lieutenants, primarily, Jenna, in the Texas House, they had targets, and they had rightful targets, and multiple people were targeting them. The Attorney General of the state of Texas, Ken Paxton, popular conservative who's actually defending us rather than caving and allowing Democrats to have their way with us. Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a lot of these incumbent rhinos, for lack of a better term, had all three of those major players, including the agricultural secretary, Sid Miller, who was one of the more widely popular Republicans, conservatives in the state of Texas, just unloading on them because they delivered for Democrats over their own constituents. They betrayed their constituents in service to socialists and all kinds of issues, parental school choice being one of the chief among them, a border patrol for Texas, another one of them. And also there was a bill, and Jenna, you're going to, maybe you're laughing, maybe you'll cry. There was a conservative bill offered by the Texas Senate that said, hey, it's not a good idea to sell your own country's land to foreign enemies. It'd be like during World War II, some left-wing moron selling land to Hitler. It'd be just like that, right? Who would do that? So this common sense law was sent over from the Senate to the House, overwhelming support for it, very common sense. We shouldn't allow China, Iran, Mother Russia to buy land in Texas. Farmland, land adjacent to our military bases. And a guy by the name of Speaker Dade Phelan, he's a left-wing individual who calls himself a Republican. He is put up there in the speakership by Democrats. He nominates Democrat chairs. He defeated that bill with a bunch of his lieutenants. And many of us said, you've got to be kidding me. All because some left-wing loon in Houston by the name of Gene Wu cried and said, oh, you're being racist if you don't want to sell land to communists. It's nuts, but that's what they did. And a lot of Texans said, this is wrong. And they targeted the Texas House, and they delivered, well, 9 defeats for RINOs outright. And as you alluded to, our pal Katrina Pearson, who a mutual friend of ours, she's in a runoff. And a lot of these so-called Republicans who are incumbents are in danger, including the Speaker of the Texas House, in danger of losing their seats. Again, the political earthquake isn't over in Texas, one of the few states doing something about their RINO population.
Which is so great, Chris Salcedo, and we're simulcasting for those of you who may have just joined between Jenna Ellis in the Morning and the Chris Salcedo Show, two great shows that are merging today, and I love that that Texas is standing up and doing something, because this is exactly what every state should be doing, and I absolutely agree with you that these are Democrats who are just running as Republicans because they couldn't get elected as Democrats, because all they've done while they've been in office is helping the Democrat agenda and the communist agenda. And in just the last 3 minutes I have with you, Chris Salcedo, I also want to ask you, though, speaking of communist China, TikTok. This is a big deal, that the divestiture that the House passed yesterday. Thoughts on that bill really quick?
I had Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne on the Newsmax show, and I asked her point blank, because there are concerns with it, that this law doesn't target our enemies. It targets American companies, and it targets Americans. It gives the government, the guy sitting in the Oval Office, the power to shut down websites. And I asked her point blank, does this bill target Americans, or does it target communists? Does it target our enemies? And she assured me that this targets... It targets those who are overseas trying to use malicious apps like TikTok is, a spy app, and take them out. So that's what she told me. Congressman Massey has a different take from Florida. What do you think?
So I spoke with the Heritage Foundation, as well as Brendan Carr, who is the chairman of the FCC, on my Salem show. This was Tuesday, and what they both said and why they are both in favor of this bill is that it is narrowly tailored just to say if the app or the website or whatever they're talking about is held by a foreign adversary, and there's very precise language in the bill, then that is the only thing that is targeted. And they specifically tailored this, unlike other bills that have been attempted to be passed. This would not allow Democrats to weaponize it and to target American companies. It has to be foreign adversaries. And we know that Democrats often twist and manipulate language, but this seems to be narrowly tailored enough that it doesn't have First Amendment concerns, censorship concerns. So so I think that Heritage and someone like Brendan Carr have thoroughly vetted this. So I was glad to see that it passed because I don't think that the Chinese Communist Party should be getting information from American citizens. That's a national concern, security
I'm
concern.
With you. But you know my concern. You saw what they did with the Patriot Act. You
100%.
Saw that it was passed to, quote-unquote, protect us under George W. Bush, but then it was turned by lunatic leftists.
And this is the problem with all the laws, is that they try to do all of this. And so we got to go to break, but Chris Salcedo, thanks so much for joining. I wish we had more time. We need to, like, simulcast an entire show sometime, but we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning to talk about the day's headlines. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. Dominique really struggled with her faith when she found out she was pregnant. She didn't know how she could carry her baby to term, but she called on God for help and asked for a sign. That's when she ran into who she calls her guardian angel on the steps of the abortion clinic. This man told her there is a better way, and he walked her across the street to a Preborn Network clinic. When she saw her beautiful baby on ultrasound and realized that he was an actual person living inside of her, the answer became loud and clear. She chose life for her precious son. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and the death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles the baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And in the last segment, we were just getting into this whole TikTok debate and the House passing the bipartisan bill forcing ByteDance to divest from TikTok. That is the parent company of TikTok. So a bipartisan coalition of House members voted yesterday to pass a bill that would effectively force the Chinese parent company of TikTok to sell the video sharing platform or face a ban in the U.S. app stores. This is according to National Review. The bill passed 352-65 with 15 Republicans and 50 Democrats voting against it. The legislation is now headed to the Senate, where it is expected to face a more difficult path. President Joe Biden has said he would sign the bill should it reach his desk, even though his 2024 reelection campaign created a TikTok account last month. And that's also a very interesting debate because a lot of young Republicans, including a couple of the younger GOP representatives that we've even had on this program, have said that as long as TikTok is out there, campaigns and Republicans should be using the platform, at least on a campaign level. Vivek Ramaswamy is prolific on TikTok, which is very interesting. So let's get Walker Wildman's perspective. He, of course, is the vice president here at AFA and is joining me now to talk about this and a few other headlines this morning. Walker, what do we make of the TikTok legislation? Because Heritage, Brendan Carr, chairman of the FCC, a lot of our conservative partners that we would trust are saying that the legislation is narrowly tailored enough that it only targets apps that are held by foreign adversaries. And if they divest and are U.S.-based, then that's fine. And so there are no First Amendment concerns.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer, for having me on. I'm concerned about the number of Democrats that support this legislation. I mean, I don't remember the last time all the Democrats got on board with legislation and it was a good idea and it was a good thing. So I'm a bit skeptical. I get where people are going here and security concerns with all the data going back to China. But I'm concerned about what are the broader ramifications here, and do the Democrats have anything tucked up their sleeve? That's what I'm really concerned about. So I think there's ways to achieve the same end game here without doing this outright ban, this outright sell, divest, or ban legislation. I think, for example, you could pass legislation about where Americans' data can be stored. I mean, how much Americans' data can be stored in China? things like that. But in this cancel culture that we live in, where the left loves to deplatform people, they love to debank people, and they love to cancel people, I'm very concerned that this legislation and this movement is going to be turned on us in the future. And we've had this happen with other things in the past. So I'm skeptical. I'm not 100% against the legislation, but I'm a bit skeptical as to what the end game here is, because once again, the Democrats and Biden have been in bed with China for decades. So why all of a sudden do they have this virtuous feeling that we've got to ban China from owning TikTok? I mean, there's a major red flags going off right now.
Yeah, and maybe that red flag is the Chinese flag that's going off right now. And so that's exactly what Chris Salcedo, my guest in the last segment, was also talking about heading into the break, that, you know, we saw how the left has weaponized well-intentioned legislation like the Patriot Act and, you know, some of those things that were for national security interests following 9/11. And so there's always a concern with legislation that it can be manipulated. And so how do we balance that? And how does AFA Action, for example, balance that when we decide here, you know, at AFA, what to support, what to tell listeners? You know, what do you look for in terms of legislation that obviously we want to make sure that China doesn't have bio data, doesn't have, you know, voice imprints, all of this information that is a national security risk, but still say, you know, we care the most about First Amendment protections?
Yeah. If you ask me what I'm really concerned about and what we should really be focusing on, it's definitely not going to be TikTok and ByteDance. I think there are major issues that should be bipartisan that they're not talking about, that Congress isn't talking about, like regarding China, and it has nothing to do with TikTok and ByteDance. And let me give you a few examples. Our entire the vast majority of our pharmaceutical supply chain originates in China. So for example, insulin, China, all these major drugs that people survive on and rely on every single day, and even during the pandemic, all of those are coming from China. So China has a stranglehold on America's pharmaceutical supply chain and can cut it off at any moment, and Congress isn't talking about that. Instead, we want to ban TikTok. So. And then you can get into the semiconductor, the chips that go in our phones, you can get into that and how they're all based in Taiwan, and China is moving on Taiwan in different ways. What happens if China moves on Taiwan and cuts off the semiconductor supply chain to America and we don't have chips anymore? So there's a litany of issues. And then you've got the Chinese Communist Party buying land in America. They're buying farmland in our own backyard. To take away the control of our agricultural supply chain in our very own nation. So that's just three issues, and I just spit those out off the top of my head. I'm not looking at notes or anything. That's just three issues that Congress could get together on and do something on, but instead it's TikTok. So I'm just, once again, I'm skeptical of what's going on here, because those three issues that I just mentioned, farmland, pharmaceutical supply chain, and semiconductors, those are major things that do affect national security. And if we were to get in a spat with China, they're going to leverage those things against us, and it could prove deadly.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why I was very proud of Governor DeSantis in the Florida legislature that on a state level said China can't own property in Florida. And every red state should be doing the same, even if there's not national consensus in Congress. But maybe that's why, maybe that's why the Democrats are okay with TikTok, because they're going, okay, conservatives or Republicans are giving us a pretty easy issue. We don't really care about TikTok. And now Joe Biden can campaign on the issue. Hey, I signed legislation that was hard on China and completely ignore the other issues. And so it's almost conservatives giving them a win for moderates and independents to overcome the kind of Beijing Biden sort of rhetoric that, of course, the Trump campaign will use headed into 2024. So, you know, so these issues are always more complex than just what some legislation may appear to be, and this is why we always need to analyze them as you've done this morning, Walker, very critically, and look at the overall scope. And in the last about 10 minutes I have with you, I want to shift topics as well to ask you about another really important topic that the left is pushing and the Biden administration is pushing. Yesterday, there was this exclusive from a journalist on social media, field reporter for the Daily Wire, saying the State Department was forced to admit that it spent $77 million pushing the diversity, equity, and inclusion agenda. This reporter, obtained their admission. Leftist race theories have been injected into the federal government with your money, and the sum could grow higher. And this is from Spencer Lindquist, for those of you listening who want to go and read this whole thread. But what does this show just about how bad the Biden administration has been compared even to the woke policies that I think truly did transform American culture and our institutions under the 8 years of Obama? The Biden administration has only gone so much further with DEI.
Yeah, that's right. And the majority of these items, and the one you just mentioned, are all funded by Congress. So as a reminder to the audience here, all of these executive agencies, these cabinet agencies, have to have money to operate, right? So Congress authorizes that money on an annual basis or whenever they feel like they want to pass a big spending bill. So they give these agencies this money to spend, and they tell them how to spend it. Now, sometimes they leave it open-ended, right, and they let the bureaucrats pick and choose how to spend the money. But this is why Republican elected officials, including Mitch McConnell and others, have had historically low approval ratings. I mean, these guys are sitting at like 15% approval rating, and that's on a good day. District of their own home state, because they fund the left's agenda. Republicans have, and even under Mike Johnson, and I like Speaker Mike Johnson, but as a person, but he's unfortunately been signing off on these Biden funding deals. So that's one aspect of it. But the other aspect is the entire bureaucratic state. I mean, we've got hundreds of thousands of federal employees. I actually played a clip on my show yesterday of Adam Schiff, the congressman from California, talking about how telling Anderson Cooper that if Trump wins, that the intel community should not brief him or should withhold information from Trump because he's a quote-unquote national security threat. So Adam Schiff feels comfortable enough recommending to the bureaucrats and the career politicians that they need to withhold information from an incoming president. So the bureaucratic nightmare is going to have to be addressed at some point, hopefully in the next administration. It's going to have to be just reconstructed or deconstructed, and then we'll see what to do with it. Because clearly, whether it be the State Department or the Department of Justice, there is some clear, rogue, out-of-control agencies that need to be reined in severely.
Yeah, and this just underscores, Walker Wildman, how important it is not to just focus on who occupies the White House, but also who is in control of Congress in both houses, because you're right that Republicans who are supposed to be advancing the conservative agenda are signing off on this, and Congress controls the purse strings. And if Congress in the Republican majority, I mean, and maybe it is that Speaker Johnson can't keep an actual conservative conference together, because we know that the Republican majority actually spans a lot of different viewpoints, and there's maybe not an actual majority that will stop some of these spending things, but at the very least, he should be forcing those Republicans to out themselves and actually have to vote with Democrats rather than signing off from the speaker's chambers. But, you know, but that's a whole different problem. And we're seeing that the people that we think are supposed to be representing conservative values aren't really. And so we do need to pay attention to every race, not just the White House. And in a presidential year, everything is pretty much focused on the White House, but down ticket also matters. And everyone in Congress matters. Everyone in the governor's office of every state and also the legislature matters, because I was just alluding to Governor DeSantis in my home state of Florida. And, you know, there are so many protections that the supermajority legislature in Florida have given to Floridians to combat a lot of this, including the central bank digital currency. You know, some of those things that the federal government potentially could weaponize, or even a foreign adversary, that Florida is protecting its citizens against. And we need to be doing that and reclaiming more state sovereignty and not just relying on the bureaucrats in Washington, because they're not ultimately doing their job very well. And we need to hopefully elect more people to go to Washington and not become part of the swamp, but actually fight against the swamp. But until that time, we also need to be focused on state issues and state races. And this is why understanding that it's not just the White House, it's also Congress, it's also the state level. All of this matters, and our participation. And so for the listeners here, and Walker Wildman is also the host of At the Core, which is every weekday, 1 to 2 p.m. Central, so 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern on American Family Radio. These issues are a lot of what AFA Action also does. And so for people who are more interested in engaging, and maybe they're not even aware of some of these issues other than listening to AFR, how can people engage more and get involved with AFA Action?
Yeah, over at AFA Action, we're doing three primary things. We're writing pro-family legislation and pro-religious liberty legislation to put forth in various states around the country. We just had a few of our bills pass both chambers in a couple states just this week. We're protecting parental rights as well. So we do model legislation. We're researching future Supreme Court picks for the next administration, the next friendly administration. And I'm sure you're aware of that, Jenna. We're researching people that will replace justices like Thomas and Alito. And then lastly, we're putting out the iVoter Guide. Just this election cycle, we're going to research over 13,000 candidates for public office and provide evaluations on them, all the way from verified liberal to verified conservative. So that's basically the three things we're doing over at AFA Action. So if folks want to know more about that work, they can go over to afaaction.net.
And that's the scorecards, that's on both the federal level and then also in individual states as well?
Yes, that's right. So we research, depending on what state we're in, we research all federal elections in all 50 states. But when it comes down to like statewide elected office and state elected office, we research over 30 states. We go down to statewide and state elected office. So, for example, state House of Representatives, state Senate. We research Supreme Court, state Supreme Court elections. We research all those judicial candidates, and we're even going down to school board in some areas, areas where we can have a heavy impact. So we're doing a lot of elections. I mean, pretty much anyone listening, if they go to iVoterGuide.com and type in their address, we're covering some primary election in their area. And of course, in November, we'll cover all of the general election races federally, and then over 30 states we'll cover those general election races as well. So we're covering literally thousands of races, and it's very, very helpful tool for voters out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I can't tell you, Walker, how many times, you know, people from my church or just people that know, you know, me or even family members are asking, you know, how do I vote on these? Or what do I think about judicial retention? Or, you know, and we've seen how important even state offices and state judges are when you talk about the Colorado Supreme Court and what just went up in terms of the ballot issue and the 14th Amendment question. I mean, all of these things are important. So this is an incredible resource. So thanks so much, Walker Wildman. And you can listen to At the Core today. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we are always very delighted when Congressman Bob Good from the great state of Virginia drops by, who is a member of several very important committees and also is the chairman of the Freedom Caucus. So good morning, Congressman. Thanks so much for joining.
Good morning, Jenna. Great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks so much. So quickly, before we get into a couple other topics that I want to ask you about, the House did pass the TikTok legislation yesterday. What were your thoughts on this bill? Is it narrowly tailored, or do we have some First Amendment concerns?
Well, first off, yes, I supported the bill, and it was great work done on it by my friends and co-sponsors of it, Chip Roy from Texas and Morgan Griffith from right here in Virginia, next door to the 9th District. But the Chinese Communist Party does not enjoy First Amendment protections, and this is narrowly intended for entities that are controlled by China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, adversarial nations that they wouldn't have the ability to access or to have controlling interests in entities that have they have the ability to capture U.S. data, to surveil on U.S. citizens, those sorts of things that compromise our national security. So while imperfect, and there was some legitimate concern raised by some of my conservative friends, I think the overwhelming more right position was to restrict Communist Chinese Party's access to our intelligence, our data, U.S. citizens' data, information, that sort of thing. I think there's more of a greater national security threat that was at stake. And again, the Chinese Communist Party does not enjoy First Amendment protections like a U.S. company would or like U.S. citizens would, of course.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense. And some conservatives, including my last guest, who's our vice president here at AFA, voiced, potential concerns that the legislation could be used by leftists in the future to maybe go after, some of the U.S. companies or other Americans who do enjoy First Amendment protections. Do you see any concerns or does the Freedom Caucus see any concerns?
Well, I do think there's a basis for concern to that effect, because what the bill does is say that the president is the one whose power to determine if there's a national security threat from an adversarial nation and to notify Congress accordingly before action would be taken. So certainly there's concern there, but I think the greater concern is what China was doing through this ByteDance control. There's no business in China that's not controlled by the CCP. And it's very different than, of course, how things are here. And I'll just give you an example that you may have heard of this, but they put in a feature when this bill was coming before Congress that every user was unable to use TikTok until they contacted a member of Congress. So they were blocked from using it until they clicked on something that automatically called their member of Congress, put them on the phone calling that congressional office, and that's the ability they have to control those users, if you will. That was exercised, we heard about thousands of calls coming into each congressional office. That was forced by TikTok on their users for their nefarious purposes.
Wow, that's essentially forced lobbying in order to use their platform. That's ridiculous.
Could you imagine any other app or social media or that you're using and you cannot use it until the CCP gets you to do what they want to protect their controlling interest in the company?
Yeah, that is wild. And I had actually not heard I knew that they were pushing the phone numbers and encouraging their users to lobby, but not necessarily that you couldn't even go further in the app until
when you contacted. You had to put in your zip code. So they knew who your congressional member was, and then it automatically dialed them. And then you were on the phone with that office. Now, of course, you could just hang up or say, they couldn't make the person say what they wanted them to say, but it forced them to call with that device into the congressional office.
That is incredible. And what a leverage of power. And so that's really fascinating. And so, these platforms do pose national security risks, in my opinion, and certainly from, other conservative partners like the Heritage Foundation, Brendan Carr of the FCC, and others. And then, of course, with you and Chip Roy, and others that I would trust to have conservative interests at heart. This seems like this is really a big deal. But let's turn also to impeachment and that inquiry that is still continuing. Of course, we heard from former special counsel Robert Hur, and what his rationale for his decision to not go after President Biden and decline to press charges. And yet we're seeing that the DOJ is targeting President Trump, who was the former sitting president, and yet And so some of the defenses cover the president and not a former sitting vice president. So what did you make of Robert Hur's testimony, and where are we at with the potential impeachment inquiry?
Well, I didn't get to see the hearing directly because I was chairing my own subcommittee hearing during that time. So I was relied on the reviews and the highlights and so forth that I was able to see afterwards. But it was clear that that there was a determination made that either was there a reasonable expectation that there would be a conviction if he was to move forward, or was there recognition that President Biden simply, as he wrote and he said, would be a sympathetic figure as an elderly gentleman with a poor memory and therefore unable to get a conviction. And of course, the Democrats, as you know, on the panel tried to get him to say that the president had been exonerated or declared innocent. And of course, there's nothing further from the truth. What he said was, I didn't believe that we would get a conviction with a sympathetic jury, certainly not in Washington, D.C., for that matter, would we get a jury that would convict him. Because how many times did he say the president just said, I don't remember, I don't know. And of course, testimony demonstrated that the president didn't remember when he was vice president, didn't remember when his son had passed away. And then there was the reckless disregard for national security, where here a senator who has no ability to remove classified information from the SCIF, the place where we get a classified briefing, even the vice president, no ability to do that. And during the time that he was vice president and senator, he removed information apparently for purposes of writing books and monetarily profiting from those, apparently. And, reckless disregard at multiple locations and not secure, not at like at Mar-a-Lago, a secure facility where you've got, Secret Service protection and all the rest. And a former president who has the ability to declassify information, as President Trump did and does. So reckless disregard by this president and being clearly treated differently than President Trump has been treated for far more, far greater number of offenses, apparently. So either he should have been prosecuted for it, or he just didn't have the mental capacity to withstand prosecution and to achieve a conviction, is what Mr. Hur was saying.
I'm speaking with Congressman Bob Good out of the state of Virginia, who's also the chairman of the Freedom Caucus. And clearly, Joe Biden doesn't have the mental competency to be having his thumb on the levers of power. Do you think that at this point, given all of the evidence so far, that the House should move forward with impeachment?
I do think the evidence is growing and mounting, certainly, that this is the most corrupt presidential family, at least in modern times. And I've maintained many times, as you know, that the president ought to be impeached for the border invasion, the irreparable harm that he has done to us. And we don't need more further investigation for that. It shouldn't just be Mayorkas. It should be President Biden, for whom Mayorkas is carrying his politics. That said, as it relates to this particular investigation, this component where impeachment is being pursued, remember, this is the president who told us that he had never talked with his son about his business dealings or anyone else in his family about his business dealings. He had no knowledge, had no involvement. And that's been demonstrably proven to be false with multiple business visits in person, on the phone, travel. We've got travel logs and visit histories and emails and text messages and eyewitness testimony and whistleblowers, and we've got shell companies and LLCs and suspicious activity reports. We've got check copies and all of these things that demonstrate the president lied to the American people in order to win an election and clearly was involved at some level. And so, yes, my hope would be that it will be pursued. The speaker will allow this to go forward, that we will have a vote on impeachment in the House. Timeline, I don't know. I don't know how close the Oversight Committee led by Chairman Comer is to concluding their investigation. Obviously, now they're trying to call Hunter Biden's bluff and bring him in for public testimony. Remember, he didn't want to have closed-door testimony. He wanted to have a public spectacle. And Oversight said, no, we don't want to be limited to the 5 minutes and have the circus nature of it. We want to have it behind closed doors so we can go more thorough, more in-depth, and then we'll do something public. So eventually they forced him to go behind closed doors. Now he doesn't want to do public testimony when they're saying, okay, now let's have the public testimony. Let's do it before the world, before the country. Let's everybody see as members of both sides have their time to question the witness, being Hunter Biden, and he has an opportunity in front of the country to give his testimony. Now he doesn't want to do that.
Of course not. And, you know, we can all guess, I think, why. And Congressman Bob Good, let's turn now to the budget. You posted a really detailed thread on X, formerly known as Twitter. And I would encourage everyone, you know, follow Representative Bob Good. He's at Rep Bob Good. He posts a lot of very important information just to give you an idea and an understanding of what is being focused on in Congress. And this was about President Biden's fiscal year 2025 budget. And you say his budget plans to continue bleeding taxpayers dry to pander to the Democrat Party's radical base. And a few of the most egregious aspects include, and you go on to give several examples. So where is the budget and how much negotiating room does the very slim Republican majority have to fix some of these radical agendas?
Well, as the president did in the State of the Union address last week, and with this budget that he's required to release every year, and he finally released it. He released it late, of course. But he's doubling down on the harmful policies that are destroying the country and then are bankrupting our kids and our grandkids. You know, in the State of the Union, he should have asked for forgiveness and apologized for all the harm that he's caused to the country, both the massive inflation, the terrible economy, as well as the border invasion. But instead, he's doubling down. He's tone deaf, or worse, he's maliciously wants to harm the country to advance his radical agenda as much as he can with the time that he has left. And so what he's got here is it's the dollars as well as the policies. The dollars meaning he wants to try to increase the debt. He's trying to increase the debt by $18 trillion to take it from $34 trillion to $52 trillion. He wants to spend $87 trillion over the next 10 years. So that's obviously an average of nearly $9 trillion a year. He wants to increase taxes by some $5 trillion upon the American people who are suffering under his 40-year high inflation, his 20-year high interest rates, and are struggling. But more than that, the policies, you know, it's not if you're overspending in your family budget and you're running deficits and running up your credit cards and you can't borrow anymore and so forth. So there's a fiscal component to that. But what if you were spending on really bad stuff? I know it was all gambling or it was all on, you know, just unhealthy or bad things. That's what he's doing. He's doubling down on his woke policies. His harmful climate agenda is the big price ticket item. You know, continuing the war on American energy and the climate extremism. It's doubling down on the LGBTQ agenda and transgender surgeries and things like that. It bans the state's ability to prohibit men and boys competing in women's and girls' sports. You know, it's continuing to try to fund abortion as the law of the land. It just doubles down on DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion policies, critical race theory, things like that, permeating our government, our academic institution, our military, and so forth. So it's more the harmful policies in addition to the spending that we can't afford, even if it were for good policies.
And so where is Congress and particularly Speaker Johnson and then, of course, the Freedom Caucus on pushing back? Because Congress does hold the purse strings and certainly the conservative base would not want Biden providing or Congress allowing Biden to provide $3 billion to advance gender equity worldwide. I mean, that's not even spending domestically.
You're exactly right. And unfortunately, Congress is failing the American people at this point. This is the president's fiscal 25 budget we're talking about. We're finishing up the fiscal 24 budget that was, you know, we were supposed to pass by September 30 of last year, which funds the government through September 30 of this year. So as you can tell, we're 6 months into the fiscal 24 budget, and we're still doing these temporary measures. We did these continuing resolutions, predominantly passed by Democrats with a Republican majority, just 99% of Democrats voting for the last continuing resolution. Then what we did was we took the full year spending and split it into two mini buses instead of one omnibus. So instead of 12 spending bills in one, it's 6 spending bills each. And that was again passed with 99% of Democrats voting for it. We're going to fund the government with continued increased spending, with continuing the Pelosi, Biden, Schumer policies that were in place when they had full control of government. Because, Jenna, where it all comes down to, if we're not willing to say no to the Senate, not willing to say no to the Democrats, and then risk government shutdown, then we find ourselves just doing what the Senate and the White House want, to keep the government open, to keep the government operating. Why would we keep funding this border invasion? Why would we keep funding these policies that you just referenced that we campaign against and that the American people elected us to reverse? Why would we fund Merrick Garland and FBI Director Wray to continue to go after conservatives and pro-life groups and parents who show up at school board meetings and Christians practicing their faith and who are surveilling U.S. citizens, spying on U.S. citizens, weaponizing the government against its citizens, going after their political opponents like President Trump with the full force of the law and abuse of power. Why would we keep giving the money to do that? But that's what Republicans are doing because our leadership is afraid of a government shutdown. And then to your point, Jenna, this president's budget is for fiscal 25, which we're supposed to pass by September 30.
And we got to leave it there. I am so sorry, Congressman Bob Good, but thank you so much for the good fight that you are fighting on Capitol Hill and standing strong with the Freedom Caucus. That's all the time we have for Jenna Ellis in the morning. You can reach me, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.